My name's Daryl, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Wow, I love this part. My heart's just racing and the nerves are just going. We're at dinner. Are you nervous? No, I'm not nervous. That's not true now. My name's Daryl, I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. That's December 1st, 1998. I have a sponsor and I work with others. And that just means I take other men through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the way that I was guided through those 12 steps by my sponsor. You know, and I want to welcome the newcomers in the first 30 days. I'm really glad you're here. I don't know if I have a really good analogy, but the only one that I can come up with is the feeling that I've had when I got here, and it continues to this day, that I'm riding a wave that just continues to carry me. It never crests. It just continues to carry me. It never breaks on the beach. It continues to carry me through, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does for me. The effort that I've put into Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing compared to the gifts that I've received from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope you hear that tonight. And if you don't, that's okay too. I just hope that you get to another meeting and you don't drink before you do. And if you can do that, you can stay sober one day at a time. And that's what I was taught. Wow. El Sobriety Fellowship, thank you so much. And Mark for asking me. I'm on fire tonight. Thank you. I was wondering why I wasn't hearing that earlier. I don't know what the heck was going on. Whatever. I don't know. I just show up. That's all I was taught. Wow. My mind always goes blank at this time. You know, and I ask God to try to direct me and give me the words that'll, you know, get somebody to their next meeting. You know, and sometimes that person has to be me. And I'm okay with that. Now, I was born in San Francisco and I grew up in Concord with my mother, my sister, and my grandmother. And because I grew up in a household of women is not why I drank. It is why I played sports. My mom didn't know what to do with me, so she signed me up for baseball. Then it was soccer. Then it was basketball. Then it was tennis. Then it was bowling. Then it was ping pong. You name it, I played it. It's just what I did all the way through high school. If there was a weekend going on, I was doing something athletic. You know, and I'd see my father once a month, and my athletics would get in his way because I really enjoy the competition. You know, I really love playing sports, and, you know, he didn't care for that as much because it took away from his time, and I didn't really realize that or pay attention to it or really understand it. And, you know, so that's just how it was. I can remember vividly playing catch with my dad once, one time. That's it. And I played a whole lot of baseball. And I can remember we played a whole lot of ping pong. And the first time I beat him, we never played again. It just took me a lot of years to beat him. You know, I don't know what any of that has to do with being an alcoholic. But somewhere in my senior year, you know, I went out with some friends because I discovered what everybody else already knew, and that's my athletic talents weren't taking me any farther than high school. I don't get it. I don't understand. I was really good. I might have been the only one who thought so, but I figured that should have counted. So we went out, and I drank some flavored brandy, and, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night, and my room smelled like that flavored brandy along with whatever I ate that night. I have no clue. All I know, I was praying to God to please take this hangover headache away, and I'll never drink again, because I was in pain, and I just did not like it. I couldn't remember what happened whatsoever, you know, and the consequences of that were just that. That was it. You know, my mom didn't pull me aside and talk to me and teach me how to drink or say I shouldn't drink or stay away from those people or anything of that nature. You know, it just went about our very merry way. You know, she was a very good codependent. And I went out the next week with my friends. They're asking me, how come I'm not drinking? I said, well, you know, I got sick last week. We said, we told you not to drink so much brandy. It's a little too sweet. They passed me the vodka instead. So I drank the vodka the way I drink my water, the way I drink my coffee, the way I drink my soda. If it's in front of me, it needs to be drank. Doesn't make sense for it to sit there. And that's what I did with alcohol. We had it. I want it. I got it. That's just what I did. You know, and graduated high school and got a job out in San Francisco and working for a company. And did that for the next couple and a half years before I went to DVC, spent 2.5 years there and transferred over to Cal State Hayward, which is now East Bay. My son went to DVC, and now he's at East Bay. He graduates in March, and I hope he's just not on the same path. Oh, my gosh, that's just crazy. Yeah, he's a good guy. It's amazing. Started smoking weed during that time, got involved in cocaine, and we just partied. We played softball, and that's what we did. You know, and that's all I knew. The party was on. You know, every weekend we just had a party going on. You know, and then it kind of turned to where it was pretty much nightly. And it's my senior year. Yeah, I guess I could sum up my drinking this way. The decisions that I make under the influence of alcohol are decisions that I otherwise would not make in my life. That's it. There's no more to it. Prime example, Monday, senior year, finals week. 3 classes to get my accounting degree from Cal State Hayward. I pull up at 7 a.m. and think it's a good time to take the edge off because, you know, I deserve it. And I don't make it into that final. But I can lie to that teacher because I'm a good guy. You can see I can put on a suit and tie and I look pretty presentable, I think. Might be suspect, but I'm presentable. So Tuesday comes along and I pull into that parking lot at 7 a.m. for that 8 o'clock test. And lo and behold, I don't make that exam either. And I have another chance on that Thursday for that third and final one to try to, you know, maneuver my way through whatever I need to do to get done whatever I needed to get done. And I did the exact same thing. Yeah, that's what I do. It's not that I didn't know the information. It's not that I couldn't do it. I just needed to show up and write down some answers. Somehow that overwhelming pressure of real life came crashing down on me and I couldn't face it. I needed relief that alcohol gave me. The problem with the relief that alcohol gives me is that it creates a dysfunction in my ability to tell the real from the false. It makes me think that I can do other things that I can't. And, you know, so let's see. My job expected me to have an accounting degree. So what's a good idea? Leave the job. Go find a new one. I can't face the fact that I just dropped out of college and I'm not going to be able to have the accounting degree you need me to have so I can continue and have a career. You know, so I just disappear. You know, and that's what I did. Met a lady at the new job and we became involved and we were supposed to be married and she became pregnant and decided that she didn't want me to see my son and she just wanted my money and pay support. Let's see, college dropout, working at a pharmacy as a tech. Yeah, that's really a lot of money there. That's the way that it went, you know, and I filed with court and did what I needed to do. I saw my son when he was five days old for the first time, and I saw him again when he was 6 months old. And that started visitation with, you know, with my mom, you know, and I always wanted a son. I wanted to play baseball and play catch and teach him to do those things that, you know, I felt my father didn't participate with me in, you know, and I just wanted that so much. And here I had that opportunity and, you know, I was trying to be the father that I wanted to be. And my mom's first grandson and we'd go over to her parents' house to see and visit my son, you know, and I'd hold him and he's just screaming away and they're trying to get me to calm him down. And I'm just telling him it's fine. You know, I just loved hearing him scream. It was amazing. That's what I wanted to do. And every week I'd get the Disney book of the week. You know, the big ones, they're like 8.5 by 14. They're like 30 pages of pictures and 5 sentences to tell Sleeping Beauty. And I'd read that to him. And that's the father that I wanted to be. You know, and I was showing up and participating in my son's life. Only one problem. I'd be remiss if I didn't share the fact that every single one of those visits I was drunk or high. Every single one. Because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't face that. That is not the father I wanted to be. It's not the person I wanted to be, but that's what I did. That's who I am. I don't share that to say how good or bad a person I am or what it was. I share it to remind myself of what happens when I'm under the influence of alcohol. I need to remember that. I described my first drink. I'll get to my last one pretty quick here. Nothing good ever happened for me. I didn't have that. You know, when I drank alcohol, you know, I hear people say that, you know, it allowed me to participate and be with the group. That's what I was trying to do. But the problem was when I started drinking and I was with the group, I withdrew even more. I hate crowds. And when I drank, I hated them even more. Great thing about alcoholism, you know, it loves solitude. And I practiced it very well. You know, I went through the court system to get the regular visitation and that whole process and, you know, pay my child support and do all that. And, you know, we went on our merry way and we're going along. The problem is I'm still drinking and it's not getting better, you know. And met another lady and we became involved and, you know, she's my wife today. And, you know, wow, so many different things happened. I used to get this circle around my right eye, you know, because I'd be pressed up against the peephole so tight that I'd have to switch eyes because someone was coming up the step. I have no clue who it was because I haven't seen them yet. But they were there. So I'd go running out to the garage and I'd look up over the window and I'd look out and I could hear them. And I'm looking and they're not behind the van. They're not up in the tree and I'm just checking out and I turn around and I turn back and they're not there, but I heard them. Nobody moves that fast. I don't get it. Where'd they go? Because I'd go back into the house and, you know, I'd close the bathroom door and sit on the commode until my legs went numb. That's the enjoyment of my alcoholism. Oh boy, was that fun. God, please help me stand up. Nope, can't do it yet. Okay, we'll just wait. Shaking away. Oh my gosh. Those are such fun memories, aren't they? But we all have them. And it doesn't matter where or how it is. That feeling that I got, I was looking up to see bottom. I don't know any other way to describe it. Bottom was above me. I was below that. You know, whatever. I guess I could clean myself up pretty well and ended up marrying my wife. 9 months into that marriage, I came home and told her I had a problem with cocaine. And, you know, I thought that was okay because, you know, that's illegal and drinking's okay and, you know, and whatever. And so I checked into Walnut Creek Hospital and it's no longer there, but they moved everyone over to CFR and that's kind of where they're at now. And I did 8 weeks there, you know, and I started feeling good, took off on that pink cloud and I'm just floating away and it's just being wonderful. And, at the end of the 8 weeks, you know, I listened to what their plan was. I wrote out my plan, and they kind of weren't very compatible. You know, I wouldn't go see that drug dealer. I wouldn't go to that bar. I wouldn't hang out with those people. They suggested I go to a meeting and get a sponsor. I didn't do any of that. And September of that year, the company that I was with sent a few of us around the nation to Lincoln, Nebraska. Lincoln, Nebraska. I don't know what's in Lincoln, Nebraska. They have an airport nearby. I'm not sure if it's in Lincoln or if it's just nearby, but there is an airport. They have a Holiday Inn because that's where I stayed. And downstairs they have a bar because that's where we all pulled the tables together that first night. And the waitress tapped me on the shoulder and said, "What would you like to drink?" And I said, 7-7 tall, please. 6 weeks later, I'm in a hotel. My wife came and found out where I'm at because, you know, I used the credit card for the hotel because the drug dealer I had for 17 years still didn't take personal checks. So I had to use all my cash for him. So she took the van, called me up in the room, and of course I don't answer the phone, but I listened to the message. "You know, you're a sick individual. Please do not come home. But if you need help, call." Well, I had enough money to last for 3 more days, so it took me 3 days to figure out what to do. I don't ever want to forget that. Biggest traffic jam in Danville history. I took a cab to the McDonald's near the house, and let's see, the locks were changed, my checking account was closed, my credit cards were reported stolen. I'm like, when did I do all this? I don't remember doing that. Do I really have the right key? You know, so I call her up and tell her I need help. It took her 8 hours to go a half a mile. I still can't find that in the newspapers. It just makes no sense to me, you know. Oh, let's see. She was working. She's responsible. And she was taking care of what she needed to take care of for herself. And then she came and got me. Through a course of events over the next few hours, I end up checking into the camp in Scotts Valley. I think we left Danville at 5 p.m. and we were in Scotts Valley, which is on 17 heading towards Santa Cruz at 5:45. I really don't know the time exactly because I was curled up in a ball in the front seat. Well, actually, I wasn't even in the front seat. You know where your feet go in the front seat? That's where I was curled up. I was not doing well. But that's where I got to start my sobriety. And I checked in there on November 30th, 1998. My sponsor told me I have a sobriety date of November 31st. I look on the calendar and I still don't see that day. I just don't get that. You know, I don't think it's very funny. So what if it's a one day at a time program? We need to at least have the day on the calendar. My gosh. It's a Tuesday night. I think it's the first week. So it's the following week. So I'm like 8 days in. And I just got done lying on my first step to probably about four or five guys and the counselor. And, you know, I would not admit. And I told them, you know, I told them as straight as I could that I never drove with my son in the car drunk or high. Ever. Ever. Never did. Nope. Not once. You believe me, right? Yeah, I don't believe me either. But I could convince you that I'm telling the truth. Because that's what I do. I don't waver. And we're walking down to a meeting with the counselor. And you know, I turned to him and said, when can I start working step two? Let's see, I'm lying on step one, but I want to go to step two. You know, he looks at me and says, you know, this isn't a journey. I mean, it's not a race, it's a journey. You know, and I'm looking at him going, let's see, you're a heroin addict, I'm a cocaine addict, you're just moving a little too slow for me. Made sense to me. Because, okay, do you believe in God? Yes. Can you make a decision for yourself? Absolutely. Good. Steps two and three are done. Now go into that meeting, sit down, and before the meeting's over, raise your hand, introduce yourself, and oh, by the way, ask for help. Okay, I could do that. The hour meeting, 57 minutes later, I'm praying to God to ask and give me the courage to ask for help. I raise my hand, my name's Daryl, and I'm an alcoholic and I need help. That's when the miracle started. A gentleman walked up to me after that meeting and introduced himself, gave me his phone number. I called him the next day and he asked me how I'm doing. Nobody asked me how I was doing for a very long time. Pretty much because I didn't care how you were doing. Only reason I showed up is because you had something I wanted. That is the only reason I showed up. And sometimes I didn't even show up then because I got it from somewhere else. And I didn't even go and tell you. I just didn't show up. He introduced me to a man who became my sponsor while I was in there. You know, and so many things happened in rehab. It's just, it'd take a week to tell them all. Take a month to tell everything that I have experienced in sobriety since then. But suffice it to say that in week three, I became the ping pong champion of the rehab. It took me 3 weeks, not because I had to get my coordination back, because there was a guy a week in front of me who was just more coordinated. But I left there on December 30th and woke up at home on December 31st. Get out of bed and I called NA and nobody answered. I called CA, nobody answered. I called AA and somebody answered. and I asked where a meeting was at, and they told me a meeting, and I went to that meeting. And at that meeting, I felt all eight people in the meeting were talking directly to me, but I had no clue of what they were saying. But something just felt right. Gentleman spoke to me after the meeting. He said, "Where's your next meeting at?" I said, "I don't know." He goes, "Well, my wife's speaking over here at CPC tomorrow night at 8:30. Can you be there?" CPC, what's that? You know, and he described it as a church in Danville. So I went to that church and went to that meeting. At the end of that meeting, he shared with me the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to a meeting. Before that meeting's over, make a commitment to yourself to get to the next meeting and don't drink before you do. It doesn't matter if it's the next day, the next hour, a week later. It doesn't matter. Just make it. And don't drink before you do. And you can stay sober. Now, that'll keep you sober. That won't keep you sane. If you want sanity, get a sponsor, work the steps. So the next day I went to Roadrunners at 7 a.m. down in Danville. And guess where I was yesterday? Or no, that's today. Wow. Cool. I was there this morning. I just forgot. And I've been attending that meeting every day, or every Saturday. And a gentleman spoke to me after that meeting, Don P. Amazing man. Reached out and helped me so much. And he described my life to me, and this is somebody I would never even give the time of day to. And it was just amazing. I see the sponsor committee, and I talk to him, and I ask him to be my sponsor. And the next thing I know, we're meeting down at Burger King in Danville at 7 o'clock on Mondays, reading the big book and doing the steps. That Thursday night, he's like, at the end of the meeting, you know, go help Mark clean coffee pots. I'm like, do what? Go help Mark clean coffee pots. I don't drink coffee. Just go help clean. So I do that, and I get all the coffee pots cleaned with him, you know, and I got a resentment, but I don't know that's what it is. You know, I'm just kind of upset, and sure enough, you know, that I get home, and my wife's like, how can you smell like coffee? You don't drink coffee. I was helping Mark clean coffee pots. And I did a good job. What's really going on? You can't put a dish in the dishwasher. Here I am telling the truth, not being believed in, wondering why. Can't be my track record. It was pretty solid. I lied all the time. Sure enough, I went back and Mark was cleaning coffee pots the next week and I had a friend. He's an amazing man. He's a great example for me. You know, a few years back, he died of a brain cancer. And I had the gift of being able to be at a meeting with him. And after the meeting, he's thanking me for being there and bringing the meeting to his house. I don't deserve that. I had to thank him for what he gave me and what he provided me. Again, so many things happened in sobriety. My son, he played baseball, and all of a sudden he comes to me and says, Dad, I don't want to play baseball anymore. I look at him. I grip that steering wheel so tight I want to break it. Doesn't he know that's the greatest sport in the world? What the hell are you thinking? But I don't say any of those things. I wait 3 days, talk to my sponsor, and come back to him and ask him why. And he gives me an answer. I said, okay, but you're not staying home playing Nintendo. Yeah, for you guys, it's Xbox, I know, whatever. That's okay. I played Pong growing up, okay? And I'm proud of it because I was good at it. I was good at everything I did. That's not true either. And we got involved in martial arts. We got to travel and participate in nationals down out in Detroit on Ford Field. We got to go to Austin, Texas and participate there. We participated in San Jose twice. You know, and 1 year I am making reservations for vacation to go to Florida to participate in these events. Facebook, the greatest software program on the planet. I get an email from my stepmom, who I haven't talked to in about 19 years, you know, asking to make contact with me. I wrote my dad a letter at year one, and he never responded. You know, I drove to his house and put it in the mailbox, so I know he got it. Didn't hear word one. And here they are. So they call up and we make contact and, you know, hey, where do you live? We live in Florida. Really, where at? Give me an address. It's 5 miles from the house I'm staying at in Florida that I just made reservations for vacation. Are you kidding me? They didn't even know they have a grandson. They got to meet their grandson for the first time. I got to make amends to my dad, my stepmom, while my grandma, my son was there. You know, and we're driving back and, you know, he turns to me and we're stopped at a light and he says, Dad, that's really cool how you tied AA and God together. Damn, he is insightful. Because I did a good job. I can't remember a damn word I said. But I spoke from the heart the best that I could. You know, we're still in contact today. It was just truly amazing. Wow. So much has happened. I remember calling my sponsor. Hey, I got a sponsee. This is my first one, you know. And I said, what do I do now? He goes, whatever you do, don't give him any advice on life. Like, what? What do you mean don't give him any advice on life? You know, and he says to me, he goes, look where your advice got you. Couldn't argue with that. But what you do know how to do is stay sober one day at a time, work in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, go into meetings and being of service. That's what you can do. I'm like, okay, what was step one? Because I couldn't remember. What do we do? So I talked to him before, then I go talk to my sponsee, then I come back and talk to him, and that's how I learned to be a sponsor. You know, and Jerry put it so eloquently. So eloquently. I wish I could speak that well. I get done talking to a sponsee, and I'm like, God, thank you so very much. Please help me remember what you just had me say. Because I haven't a clue. None. None. Zero. It felt right. It was right. It was the words the person needed to hear, and I have no clue of what they were. Zero. God does for me what I can't do for myself. Because I cannot communicate that well. Take a baseball bat. It'll work. Does for me. Break the door down. Punch a hole in the wall. Makes sense to me. At least it used to. But that's just not the way to operate now. A couple more quick stories and I'll be done. It's about 6:30 in the morning on a Monday. And I get a call from my son's mom, and she tells me that he's being taken to the hospital. He just had a seizure. I didn't even know what a seizure is. And I didn't know what was going on, and I call my boss, make arrangements so I could leave work and do all that. And I get down to the hospital and check on him and find out what's going on and start to learn about epilepsy and seizures and those types of things. And it was just a scary thing, but I made 2 phone calls. You know, I called my sponsor, let him know I was going to the hospital. I called a friend that's close to me, Steve, and let him know that I was going to the hospital. You know, and we're there, and I'm by myself with him at the moment, wherever she was at, doing what she needed to be doing. And the nurse walks up and says, you know, his grandfather, your dad's outside. You know, and this is a number of years before we weren't in contact yet. And I'm thinking, oh, crap. It's his grandfather, all right, but it's her father, and we don't talk. And I walk out there, and it's Gordon. And Gordon worked in the high school across from Kaiser Hospital, and he got a phone call from Steve, and he came down to check on us. Really? That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't deserve any of that. But I made the phone calls. I showed up and did what I was supposed to do. Another time, I was about 4 years sober, I was approaching it, and I just got fired from a job. 29 people walked into that room, 3 of us walked into this room as we were getting bought out, and I was the only person that wasn't given a contract to the new company. I was not a happy camper, because I'm good at what I do. Well, at least I think so. Seems they had other thoughts. Ill-founded as they were. Call my wife, tell her that I just got fired. Call my sponsor, tell him I just got fired. Call my friend, tell him I just got fired. I'll meet you at the noon meeting. Okay, I go to the noon meeting, and this is on Tuesday. And sure enough, I show up to that meeting, and the next night, I meet with my sponsees at a sponsee's house, and, you know, we have burritos and read the 12 and 12 and, you know, do what we're supposed to do or that I was taught to do. And gentleman answers the door. And I'm like, you're not looking good. What's going on? And he was 2 months away from 2 years. He goes, I got fired on Monday. I got 1 day of sobriety. What? He hopped in his car and drove to the bar. He didn't give me a phone call. I didn't know. You know, and as I left that meeting, I called my wife and said, I need to go to a meeting. Well, didn't you just have a meeting? yeah, but I need a real meeting because I'm freaking out. I'm not doing well. So who do I call? I call my sponsor. I call Steve and I find a meeting. Wednesday night, 7:30, down in Danville. And it's a book study, and I walk in, and there's four other people there. Two of them are in their first 30 days. One of them I had the pleasure of taking through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and has 12 years to this day. Are you kidding me? I got fired from a job so 2 days later I could meet a newcomer at a meeting to take him through the steps so his life could be changed? Are you serious? I wanted the opportunity that I had at that company. I could taste it. It was a career. It's what I wanted. But I don't get what I want. I get what God wants for me. And I don't always like that. Because I know better. Well, it's true. I know what's good for me. Sleeping in, not going to meetings, and getting drunk. Unfortunately, that does not work. But if I show up at Alcoholics Anonymous and I do the next right thing, and sometimes I don't, and I pay the price for that. My son graduates from Cal State East Bay this March. My mom's coming down to watch him walk in his graduation on June 13th at 5:30 p.m. And I wouldn't get to participate in any of that if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you.
Thank you, Del.